All right, everybody, welcome to the show. Neil, how's it going this week, man?
We're still deep into the testing season. I wasn't there for it, but apparently one of our students had a massive meltdown and cussed out everybody on site.
Oh, shit.
Nice. Okay.
It's been a week.
No kidding.
Yeah, and let's see, it's April. How long you got left?
Basically end of May, so 6 weeks or so.
Yeah, whatever. You can hang by your fingernails somewhere for 6 weeks, probably,
Yeah.
if you had to try hard enough. You can do anything for 6 weeks. Okay, and outside of what the movie we're about to talk about, have you been consuming any content?
I've been working my way through Baldur's Gate. Pretty deep into Act Two now, and I think so. I'll also be dog sitting starting tomorrow for like 11 days, and Easter's coming up. So, I did Passion of the Christ last year for the first time, and I don't think I can do that to myself again
That's
anytime
wild.
soon. But might revisit Prince of Egypt and maybe even the Ten Commandments. Prince of Egypt for sure. Ten Commandments maybe.
What if we did, this is kind of getting ahead of ourselves. I know it's not my turn to pick or anything, but what if for Easter we did The Last Temptation of Christ
I've
by
never
Martin
seen it,
Scorsese?
but I'd be down. And Willem
Yeah.
Dafoe, right?
Yeah, Willem Dafoe
Jesus. J-Man.
as Jesus, but David Bowie as Pontius Pilate, I think.
That's awesome.
But yeah, which is crazy. So, yeah, maybe we should do a special one-off for
I've
next
never
week instead
seen
of
Ten
doing.
Commandments, but I would love to see that. I heard it's
That
like
one's long as
worth
fuck.
it. Oh, I
Yeah, I
believe
mean,
it.
like you have to brace yourself in, but it's from that time in Hollywood where they put the effort into sets, practical effects, having like 2,000 extras.
Nice.
Yeah.
Like
It was
a Knight Errant or something.
the end of the era of like the epics. Like every movie with Charlton Heston that came out between 1950 and 1965 was basically like 3.5 hours long and cost a gazillion dollars to make. Ben-Hur is like that, and Ten
I
Commandments,
still
and
need to watch that.
there's a few others like that. Well, good. So you haven't finished, but this will be your first time finishing Baldur's Gate, right?
Wow, how many hours into it are you? I know you said you're in Act Two, but.
That's a great question. I don't like to scum save too much, but like my but like my but earlier I made a choice to progress into a new zone and it like wrecked like five other ongoing quests. I was like, oh shit, and then I realized that
Damn.
my saves were not I couldn't just like quickly backtrack on it, so I had to like redo a bunch of stuff because I wasn't happy with how that worked out. So
Right, I get that.
my Steam hours don't correlate to the amount of time that I've actually, or
Oh,
like
great.
the amount of progression that you would get.
Right. Okay, I gotcha.
Also, I'm autistic about like exploring every corner of the map and picking up every piece of loot. So
And who are you romancing?
right now I'm s still choosing between Shadowheart and Karlach.
Nice. And
But
what
I did just add Minthara to the party, so do I want evil goth mommy? It's possible.
what
Who's to
class
say?
are you?
Sorry, what?
What class are you to?
Playing a Oath of Ancients paladin.
Okay. Nice. Cool, dude.
Well, Neil, you will be—I don't know how you'll feel about this—but Grace just finished it like 3 days ago. So does that make Grace a realer gamer than you?
I mean, she hasn't beaten Wrath of the Righteous or Kingmaker, which are much more in-depth RPGs in their own way. So,
Damn.
well, I don't even know what those are. So.
They're Owlcat's Pathfinder games. If she liked Baldur's Gate, for the gameplay, she should check out those. Like, they're not comparable as far as like graphics and like special effects and stuff, but they're also more like I think there's more depth to them. I also think that there's some like superior like what's the word I'm looking for? Quality of life improvements. Like the big one that comes to mind for me is Baldur's Gate, is that the character that you have currently selected is the one who like does dialogue. So if like let's just say I start a dialogue option and my character isn't the charisma class and I need to make a charisma check, then I've got the negative modifiers or whatever, and then my bard is off like just in the background doing something. The Pathfinder games, it sort of assumes that everybody's listening. So like you'll scroll through your options and it'll say like, oh, you know, Gideon's my bard. Do you want Gideon to try to do the charisma check to talk to this person?
Oh, kind of like save you from like having to mess with that.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just like a general dialogue rather than that one-on-one.
Nice.
Which I prefer personally, but I think I can see other people liking Baldur's Gate 3-1, but.
Yeah, I think for her it's the combination of like, you know, it's more modern, so it's got the production values and everything, and then it's like it's deep, but it's somewhat accessible, and you know, it's got a lot of production value stuff going for it too. So, yeah, she liked that, and she's out there right now playing the new Indiana Jones game that just unlocked a couple hours ago. So she's out there. I told her like, don't let me see. I don't want spoilers. So she's out there doing that right now. Well, good. And Gideon, of course, you already heard from him. How are you this week? Anything you've been up to? You want to talk about?
Yeah, I've been doing good. Let me think. I wrote down some of the stuff we've seen recently. So let's see. So the other day we watched the original Frankenstein on 4K from 1931. That was pretty good. Obviously has that kind of sometimes the old movie problem of just kind of dragging a little bit sometimes. But overall, I was pretty impressed. And
who played Dr. Frankenstein in this movie? Was it a famous actor or some, you know, crazy old
actor? I don't know who the Dr. Frankenstein was, but is it Boris Karloff?
Boris Karloff is the Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah. Right. He's the monster, yeah. And it was really fun. So that was cool. We also watched Anora, which got a lot of praise this past like award season. That was really good. Liked that a lot. And this movie called Y2K, which was kind of like almost like a 80s style slasher just about Y2K. And mild spoiler, a little too much Fred Durst for me. Fred Durst is like in the movie kind of an alarming amount for me.
What did you say the name of the movie was?
Y2K. It came out a few months ago in theaters, but it just hit streaming and we just put it on and watched it the other night. And I finished that show, Common Side Effects, which is excellent. Love that. Definitely recommend it to anybody. Obviously watched Crocodile Dundee. Finished Super Metroid. Super stoked about that.
Nice, dude.
Finished the main Fortnite Battle Pass, and I'm hearing rumors the next one is going to be Star Wars themed, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Jin Lock Sabrina Carpenter, or no?
Yeah, so it's like the way, if you have like the Fortnite crew, which is like, you can pay, I think like, it's like $13 a month, and they give you 1,000 V-Bucks, they give you all the Battle Passes, which is like the Lego, the normal Battle Pass, the Festival Battle Pass, which Sabrina was in, like one of her skins. And I think you also get the Rocket League Battle Pass. So just
That's all the same company.
But yeah, so basically I got one of her skins by proxy.
Okay, cool. Awesome.
And then just binging Adventure Time, and we're in season 6, and it's fucking awesome right now. It's awesome. So cool. Good.
Well, guys, I've been our you know, we kind of cycle through our like show, our eating show, right? Our nightly, we're eating dinner, we're watching our new episode of whatever show we're working through at the moment. So we're doing The Boondocks right now, the Adult Swim show. That's nice. Been good. Some of the episodes are really dated, right? Because they like pull out a cell phone and it's like an old dumb cell phone, or they pull out like pagers or things like that. So that's been good. Been working on Metroid. I finished. We installed it the other night just to play like a little bit of multiplayer, the Space Marine 2. And then I ended up like playing the campaign again because I was like, I really didn't like this. Let me just double check that I don't like this. And sure enough, it's like, it's not that I don't like it or that I hate it. It's just swimming in sevens, you know. It's like right at that border of it's, you know, just being a total mixed bag kind of a game. So I just finished that.
Oh, I was just gonna say, you think you'd be more into it if you maybe have more experience with like the universe and stuff? Or?
Here's what I'll say, and Neil, you can back me up on this: is that I understand why people who are into Warhammer go apeshit for this game, because like I get the feeling that most Warhammer games are not very high budget. Then it is cool to see some of the Warhammer universe shit with really, really great graphics and sound effects and things like that. Even if the game itself is kind of like, you know, whatever, it's cool to see all that with like a really AAA production value. That said, I just think that the core combat of Space Marine is really sloppy, and most of what surrounds it from a gameplay perspective is like not that interesting. That said, if I was like, because I've had this same thing happen to me with like when I was in middle school with Dragon Ball Z games. Like a Dragon Ball Z game would come out and it would be like a 7, but I would think it was the best game ever just because I wanted a new Dragon Ball Z game, right? So so I understand that your mileage may vary based on like how intimately familiar you are with this, with the source material, I suppose. But still, I don't hate it. I just think that it's like people putting it on their game of the year list is like a little psychopathic. But let's see what else I've been. So did Dundee, saw Princess Mononoke in 4K.
Hell yeah!
At the IMAX, that was really awesome. I will say, AMC Southdale in Minneapolis, flat soda out of the pop machine.
Bruh.
Don't like that.
What the fuck?
And that theater is really dirty for being in like the really rich part of Minneapolis. That theater is incredibly run down and not very well kept up.
That sucks.
And I will say, I still don't understand why people think Mononoke is like the one of the best Ghiblis. Like everybody puts it in their top two or top three. I do not feel that way. There's like five Ghibli movies I would put above Princess Mononoke. I'm just like not that into it.
I still need to see more, but I definitely like it a lot. And I recently, I think I watched it like twice last year.
Yeah,
because I watched it on my own, and then my brother hadn't seen it, so we watched it. Yeah,
it's, I mean, it's cool. It's Avatar, right? It's like man versus nature and all that jazz.
I was gonna say like Zelda, kind of, but
right, and it's very, you know, Dances with Wolves and Pocahontas and all that. It's just like, to me, there are a lot of their movies are more unique than Princess Mononoke. You know, like I don't know any other movie about a World War One veteran who's also a pig, you know, but I know a lot of movies that are about like, you know, this nation of people is destroying the environment and the environment fights back. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I get that.
So yeah, it was still a good experience to go do that. And then I went on a bike ride and went around the lake a couple times. It was nice.
And did you say you beat Super Metroid or not yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
I got sidetracked when I was going to finish it when we were like all running up to last Wednesday, and then, you know, Paul, I don't think is close to finishing it. So I said, oh, fuck it. I got other things to do. So, but I'll get there.
No worries.
So we are here this week to talk about, Crocodile Dundee, the 1986 movie. So I brought this to the podcast, mainly because it was just the first thing that popped into my head. I'd never seen it before. I understood that it was a fairly light, bright, easy summer blockbuster kind of movie. And it was generally, like, I don't know anybody who doesn't like it. Everybody I talked to about this movie has, like, fond memories of seeing it in the 80s. So, I don't know. And it just seemed like a fun thing to bring that's kind of outside our normal wheelhouse.
Yeah.
I don't have any history with this movie aside from knowing the that's not a knife, this is a knife kind of
line.
I think everybody knows that bit. Mm-hmm. And I also just colloquially know that it had a budget of like $10 million and then made almost like $400 million at the box office. So this like destroyed, right? It was like the top grossing movie of the year, aside from Top Gun. Just did bonkers numbers and made a shitload of money. So, Gideon, what was your previous experience with Crocodile Dundee?
Yeah, pretty similar. I feel like I only ever, like, I've heard about it. I'd heard that line, you know, about the knife. And I always remembered looking at it when I was in family video. And even, like, just as I was a young girl, I was like, there's something very, like, strangely sexual about this movie poster. Like, it's kind of throwing me off a little. Like, mm-hmm. just the way he's, like, creeping through and smiling and shit. So, yeah, didn't watch the trailer or anything. Yeah. So, it was pretty much a blind watch for me.
Okay. And Neil, how about you?
I had seen this, like, way back in the day. My parents rented it from family video or something. So we watched it together at some point, like, 2 decades ago. So I remembered the This Is a Knife.
Mm-hmm.
Enough to, like, recognize the references in The Simpsons. I see you're familiar with Knifey Spoonie. I remembered enjoying it at the time. I thought that there was some funny stuff, but not like it wasn't in my brain as like an enduring classic, and I didn't know any of the history around it being like an absolute gangbuster of a movie. Or I think it got like 4 Emmys.
It got a couple Golden Globes and
I think it won an Academy Award also for writing.
It was nominated for Best Original Screenplay. It did not win.
Won the Golden Globe. Won the BMI Film and TV Award for Best Music. And Golden Screen Best Sold Tickets. It won that too.
It won the Grace Grundhofer Award for movie star she would most like to pork. So where to begin with Crocodile Dundee? I mean, it's a fairly straightforward plot. I mean, a New York, busybody writer for Newsweek or, some other similar publication is going to do a article on this, this like legendary Australian, I don't want to say Bushman. Does Bushman mean like Aboriginal? Like, isn't that slang?
Either of you guys know that? To be honest.
Okay. Well, then let's just say this outdoorsy kind of Australian outback kind of guy. And so she goes down, stays for a couple nights on like a safari with our titular Mick Dundee, who's kind of like a local legend. He got bit by a crocodile and fought it off, and he's done all this crazy shit in the outback. He was like raised in the outback, whatever. So they hit it off. There's some like kind of light romance, and then she ends up dragging him back to New York City, so he can see her part of the world too. And you know, events transpire. Just this movie, it was so funny to me, like how little of an actual driving plot this movie had, except for like, you know, she has a fish out of water half of the movie, and then mm-hmm. he has a fish out of water half of the movie, and funny things had just happened around them. I was actually incredibly relieved that it didn't have much of a like actual plot to it, because mm-hmm. like by the second half of this movie, I was getting worried that they were going to be like, there's a infestation of crocodiles coming to New York City and only one man can stop it. Like, I was like really not wanting them to go down that road, and I'm so glad that they didn't, and they kept it light and kind of bright and easily digestible. So what did you guys think of the overall, just give me your broad strokes impressions, Neil? You enjoyed it, you know, kind of your 10,000 foot thoughts.
Yeah, I think the comparison that I'll say is that in the past, I think when we were talking about the Phantom Menace, like that's like the greatest B movie ever made, or perhaps the most expensive B movie ever made. Like, Dundee is to me like sort of the opposite of that, where again, like, apart from like travel budget to get to Australia and like maybe like a, I don't know exactly how they did the effect for the crocodile attack, but you know, like some level of like animatronic, like, you know, it's not an expensive movie to make, especially by modern standards. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So in that regard, and then the fact that you know, it made like a quintillion times its budget, it's just, you know, kind of remarkable in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But like at the same time, it's a B movie, and like, okay, I have a story that I want to tell. How do I do it without a budget? And that, but like, at no point does it ever feel cheap, right? Like, there are times where, you know, it's goofy and ham-fisted.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like, you know, you modernize some of the technology and like, you know, this could be a, you know, I can see like the same script being made today, and it's going to cost like a quarter of $1 billion because all the actors and actresses want like $50 million to appear in it, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I think that I believe that this was, I believe the actor's name is Paul Hogan.
Yep.
I think like the Amazon, you know, like behind the scenes things that pop up whenever you move your mouse, said like he came up with the idea while flying to New York after he'd gotten like picked out. Like I think he said he was working as like a rigger, so working in the background on a TV show that was like doing a talent search in Australia, and the talent search people were like, that guy, he's got the look.
That's funny.
Yeah, he was on a bunch of, before he did Crocodile Dundee, he did like tourism videos for Australia. Like, you, it's okay. Like, come to Australia. He's where the phrase throw another shrimp on the Barbie comes from.
Oh.
Okay. It's from those Australia tourism videos, and he did some of them before Dundee, and then some of them after Dundee, where he like leaned into it a little more. But he's like literally Mr. Australia, basically. Like, they just picked a national representative and said, "Okay, you're the guy. You're going to go promote our country." And I think I read that tourism to Australia after this movie came out just fucking skyrocketed.
Right? Oh yeah,
everybody wanted to go after this movie came out. Gideon, how about you? 10,000 foot thoughts on Crocodile Dundee?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really glad I watched it. I had a lot of fun with it, but probably for the wrong reasons a lot of the time, with just how dated some of the humor or jokes were at points.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh my God. But one thing I got to mention, so I rented the DVD of this from the library. And you know, I've kind of turned completely around where like I used to think DVDs are just all like awful, but I've since watched like plenty of stuff on DVD, and sometimes I think it looks great or on par with like even sometimes streaming and stuff like that. And this DVD release was like from 2001, and like you guys mentioned, like I'd heard it made so much money, and the transfer in the DVD was like absolute dog shit. Like, it was like, you could see like pockmarks in the film all over the place. On the right side of the screen was like a blue line, like it wasn't like lined up properly and shit. Yeah. That was like there sometimes and gone other times. So I was like, do you guys not give a shit about this movie? Like, what the hell? Like, I thought this was like a really, really big hit. You know, I had one of those things where it's like the special feature is like the interactive menu, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh my God. So but that didn't really hamper my experience. Just something I wanted to mention. I just thought that was kind of strange. But yeah, had fun. It was just kind of bizarre, and it felt like it's like, was this like a lot of Americans like first introduction, like, yeah, Australian people exist. Yeah. And because, right. like, I don't really know what the internet, if it was even really, probably wasn't widespread at all at that point.
It was just government, DARPANET at that point. I mean, no normal person had internet.
So I can see why it was a big hit for a lot of people. And it's like constantly throughout the movie, it's like, oh, you got me, like, I'm having a lot of fun. And it's like, oh, you lost me, oh, God, like,
mm-hmm.
stuff like
yeah,
that.
So what do you mean by that? Give me an example of that.
So it's like, you kind of want to root for Dundee, right? But he's kind of like a sexist asshole, like, kind of a lot of the time, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Or, like, different things, like, he's doing the weird, like, Australian Jedi mind trick on the water buffalo, and then it doesn't move out of the way. It just, like, lays down still in the road. I'm like, you didn't do anything to help, dude. Like, you know, like, stuff like that. And for how much this is, like, a fish out of water movie, this was, like, a missed opportunity that really irked me. I was like, he gets, like, you know, he gets really drunk or, like, parties with the taxi cab guy. And then I think he tells him, like, oh, you're, like, too drunk. Like, I'm going to drive. But then mm-hmm. earlier he told those women of the night, like, I've never even left where I've grown up. I'm like, you're telling me you're going to drive in New York City? Like, why don't we have a scene of him driving like a fucking maniac? You know, he's in the outback. So I thought that was a little disappointing with that. So just stuff like that, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Little bits and pieces here and there. Okay. Mm. Neil, anything like that for you? Any like, you know, you're there 1 minute and you're not there the next minute?
So I totally agree with Git about the water buffalo scene where it's cool if you're like half of an animal whisperer. Like, you stop the water buffalo from being aggressive, but you have not stopped yourself from, or you haven't like gotten the water buffalo out of the way.
Yeah. And then so, I don't even know, did they just like cut or something? Like,
yeah,
I don't
yeah,
even
they
know.
Just kind of, they didn't like drive around it. You're right. Now that you're saying that, I didn't think of that as like initially a problem, but now that you're saying it, I'm like, yeah, okay, that is a little fucked up, but yeah, oh well. But like right after that, he took a kangaroo corpse and pretended to make it hold a gun and then scared off all the poachers in a scene that had me absolutely howling with laughter in my living room. That was like the funniest shit I've ever seen.
That was fucking awesome. That, like, if we're just gonna quickly talk about like amazing moments that like basically had me jump out of my seat, was that. That was like absolute cinema moment. Like, you did. I couldn't fully realize. I was like, "Is he like wearing it?" I was like, "Did he skin it?" I'm like, "Oh my god, he's holding the carcass of the roo." After he like was also like, "Oh, I'm not gonna do anything. I don't give a shit." Like, did he say it's like not illegal? I was like, "What?" I was like, "Are they like pests? Is it like a deer type situation?"
I think it is like that. But
that's what I was thinking. That's all I could think of. Yeah.
Yeah. I think this movie does suffer. It's a mixed bag where, in terms of, characterization. So like right off the bat, you've got the two leads, you've got Crocodile Dundee, who's like a larger than life Australian outdoorsman. Right. And you've got the inquisitive journalist from New York. How are they going to interact? Okay, that's a fine premise. And so there are lots of like fun little moments of characterization for Dundee where like they put him up in a ritzy hotel and he's like figuring out what a bidet is, which, you know, frankly, if you put me in front of one and ask me what it was, I probably wouldn't know. You know, he's figuring out like television, but then later, like, there are subtler moments where like he's taking a phone call and you see on the floor that he's just laid out a blanket and a pillow, even though there's a bed, because that's what he's used to. And I thought, oh, that's nice. That's like a nice little thing in the background that works perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like there's implications that, so like the premise of the story is that a journalist wants to interview him because she heard a story of a guy who got his leg bitten off by a crocodile and dragged himself through the outback to safety. But, and so when he takes her out, he says, oh yeah, I was just out here fishing for Barramundi. But then she finds bullet shells in the bottom of his wrecked boat. So was he a poacher? It's never addressed.
Mm-hmm.
But then later he's against guys who are legally killing kangaroos. And I get like, oh, you know, kangaroos are cute, at least on the surface, and crocodiles are big and scary, so it's okay to kill them. But like, it kind of jumps the shark on a couple of like things that, if the movie was more interested in telling like a deeper story, I think would have been useful. Mm-hmm. And I think it also speaks to the strength of the movie that even without those things, it works. Mm-hmm. But it is kind of like a unused Chekhov's gun, where mm-hmm. like there's potentially this darker aspect to the character. And then we're just going to totally ignore it and just focus on him being goofy and, you know, jumping around New York and being a fish out of water.
Mm-hmm. You know, something about what you said reminds me of, I think this movie probably changed during the development of it, because something that struck me as kind of odd is in the beginning, he is very like, well, you're just a Sheila, you're just a dumb woman, you're not going to make it, blah, 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 blah. And it almost seems like every other movie where they're going to set that up early, and then, you know, she's going to save him, and then they're going to be equals for the rest of the movie. And, you know, it just seemed like it was falling into that trope for me. And then by the time they get to New York, their relationship isn't really like that anymore. You know, like it does seem like his character changes a little bit by the second half of the movie. And it becomes more about like putting Paul Hogan in funny situations than it is about like, oh, you know, he doesn't think women can do this, but we sure changed his mind about that, and now we're all better people for it. Like, and I'm glad we didn't do that, because that would have been a much more, like, I've seen that movie a lot of times. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I do think there is stuff that is set up in that first, let's say, third of the movie that is in Australia that it seems like by the time that they were deep into production and doing the New York stuff, they were like, fuck all that. Like, let's just take him to an Italian restaurant and have him punch out this douchebag. Mm-hmm. Let's, you know, have him. I know that transvestite is not a, I don't think that's a politically correct term anymore, but there's a man dressed up as a woman. Like, let's have Paul Hogan run around and, you know, grab somebody by the croutons. Oh, that's funny. Blah, 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 blah. It became more about that. Something else I will really point out that I really liked about this movie was the New York City of 1986 is still gritty and cool in a way that it is not anymore. And it was cool to see that old New York City pop up in a movie. Sort of the one from, and, you know, obviously not as bad as the 70s, is not as rough as we see in Taxi Driver or Midnight Cowboy or The Warriors, but still a cool, gritty, dangerous New York was a good setting for this movie. And it's not quite the New York of, like, you can see that it's kind of becoming like the New York of American Psycho or Wall Street or something like that, but we haven't quite gotten there yet. It was cool to see that in this movie.
Like metamorphosizing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of like the perfect in between like a bomb just went off in New York of like 1970s and Disneyland New York of how it is now.
Almost kind of reminded me of the streets of like Streets of Fire
that yeah.
Neil brought, you know, like visually in that way. One thing I think, a couple of things I really liked was, I feel like it had some beautiful sets in this movie. Mm-hmm. Especially like seeing her crazy rich dad's house, mm-hmm. and her like dope ass like Sydney apartment, with her like TV on like a stand for some reason, stuff like that. Just really cool. And I feel like the most beautiful shot in the entire movie for me was when he's leaving Australia on the plane and the like sun is setting and stuff. That was really gorgeous. I was actually really impressed by that. But one thing that was kind of almost like a monkey wrench for me, because like there's not really much of a plot and that's fine. But like her boyfriend or whatever the hell he is, because you don't even really know in the beginning. He's like, you know, hardly at all in the beginning, and then not really talked about. And then it seems like they're going to have like a will they, won't they with like Dundee. And then like that asshole boyfriend character is just like, I feel like he's in the movie like way too much. And he's just detracting from the potential of like interesting moments that Dundee and her could have had.
Yeah,
so that was a little frustrating for me.
I think I agree in like principle where, again, I think this comes down to characterization where the boyfriend is either not in the movie enough or he should have been cut entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And he should have just been the editor that he's like, oh, like to act as like exposition at the beginning of the movie. I'm in Australia. I'm going to look into this. Send me the money to do the safari or whatever.
Right.
But like, so I think that's probably the ideal, because where he is in the movie, he has like one major asshole scene where they're drunk at the Italian restaurant and he's kind of making fun of Dundee and Dundee punches him out. but prior to that and after that, like, he's not like a major asshole. Right, like, I didn't hate him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're supposed to hate him. Like, again, you don't see all of these. Like, there's not enough to the relationship between him and the Sheila to like make you want Dundee to steal him away, or for him to like have conceivably like get her to go back on her engagement to him, and you know have the. I think kind of sweet and iconic end scene in the subway.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's just not enough of him to justify like the jerk boyfriend and like, oh, she's unhappy in this relationship. Again, there's like small things where like, whenever they're together, they never kiss on the mouth. He always kisses her on the cheek.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that again, I think you're probably right, Sam. They're probably like reshoots or like they reworked the script pretty heavily like while it was in production or something, and like there are like elements that are left over, and that's probably one of those. But like I think yeah, there should have been out of there entirely, or he needed to be a bigger asshole, because I just don't think he works in the context of the movie.
He is very like, I wasn't even sure that they were together at first.
Same.
and there was kind of like a little bit of like weird double language on like, wait, are they together or like what's actually going on here?
And then her to be like, I'm in love with him. I'm like, are you? Like what?
Yeah, I don't sense then, any kind of chemistry.
Yeah, and her like being like, oh, he's like, I thought you made a pass at me. What if I did? It's like, but you're in love with this other guy? Like, what are you?
Yeah.
Like, and that's fine if that's just her character or whatever.
Yeah,
but
like,
it was just,
yeah, you're right. They established so early that she's not even really interested in this guy that she's dating, that it doesn't really come as that big of a surprise as like the ending motivator of the movie. Totally agree with you on all that. I think that like, really, the crux of this movie is how likable Paul Hogan's character is. And I know that he does things that, like, obviously it was a different time, it was a different era, that you can't get away with doing now. There's something I can't put my finger on that's just so lovable about this character. Like, he just goes around, makes friends everywhere he goes.
Mm-hmm.
He's really egalitarian in terms of, like, race, you know? Like, I thought, like, the conversation where he was like, what tribe are you? He says that the first black guy he sees in New York City, he's like, what tribe are you? And I thought that was, like, going to be like, okay, here we go. Like, he's going to get in a fight, and this is going to be bad news. And he just, like, makes best friends with the with
yeah.
the guy. There's something very likable about Dundee himself. And I think a lot of it is Paul Hogan. Something that somebody pointed out on the internet that I hadn't thought of, but I think contributes in this movie, is that this is, you know, an 80s action hero, basically, who doesn't kill anybody. You know, very unusual for this era of Stallone and Schwarzenegger movies of just massacring waves and waves and waves of dudes. Like, Paul Hogan is kind of like a masculine, archetypical hero. And, you know, never permanently seriously injures anybody that isn't a crocodile, I suppose.
Or a pimp.
Or a pimp. Neil, did you notice, did you see my my cameo in this movie when he's in New York for the first time and he, like, stops the car and he's, like, takes his hand out the window and shakes the guy's hand and he's like, Mick Dundee, here for a few days, how are you? I thought for sure you were going to send me a screenshot of that and be like, oh, Sam's in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I should have said that. I mean, you know, I could also be, like, fully offensive and just say, you know, Sam, you also kind of looked like the pimp.
Oh, yeah, I don't.
I'm not going to go there.
Hey, you know, it's all right. So, guys, what else do we want to take our Dundee discussion? Favorite bits of the movie? We already covered the kangaroo machine gun bit.
I got to shout this out. Okay, so, you know, it's always nice when you're watching an older movie and you see, like, older cars and stuff like that. And I noticed when he was talking to the limo driver that he becomes friends with, I was like, damn, that's like a crazy tail fin on the back of the trunk or whatever. It was like, it's like big. Like, what a waste of just extra metal and shit making this, like, heavy. Like, does this do anything? And then it does later. Dude, that I literally, like, jumped out of my seat. I was clapping with Alyssa. I was like, oh my god, is he gonna do it? Is he gonna do it? Him throwing the fucking tail fin like a goddamn boomerang to hit the guys who were beating him up. Who also, I'm like, is this guy gonna get fired? Like, he busted the shit out of his windshield of that car that he is probably like his work's car or whatever, just to save him. So that was fucking awesome. That was definitely the best moment for me.
I felt like there was a lot of those moments for me where I was just like, fuck yeah, this is awesome.
I thought the end, like, telephone ending was fucking hilarious. Very
cute. Really cute.
But also, it is kind of like Alyssa, we watched it together and she was like, so what the hell though? Like, is he, like, moving to New York? Is she coming to Australia? Like, what's gonna happen, you know?
There is a sequel that takes place in, there's Crocodile Dundee 2 that takes place in New York. It's like a,
okay,
came out only a couple of years afterwards. And then there was like a sequel 15 years later. Whoa. where they go to LA.
Holy shit, dude.
So, you know, and maybe we'll get to the whole trilogy at some point.
Triple threat.
One thing I will say that I like about that is, so the female actress who I don't think we've said the name of her the entire time, and
Linda Kozlowski.
Yeah. So she only got like 13 credits on IMDb, and three of them are Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah.
But I do like, and I think it does go with like the character as he's presented in the second half of the movie, where like, you know, for the sequel, they could have like, you know, and I'm sure they, you know, gave it like 10 times the budget or something, right? And you, and so they, and so you get like a, I'm trying to think of a late 80s name, but like, but like you could have put in like a young, you know, like Hollywood actress, and just like pushed that other actress to the side, replaced her character, like, oh no, it didn't work out, that Shayla was too in love with New York, and I think it's kind of sweet that I assume since she's in both of the sequels that they're still together as characters. I think that's just kind of like, you know, unlike like the Top Gun sequel where they like totally wrote out the female love interest from the first one. I don't know. I like that.
Her and Paul Hogan were married to each other for like 25 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, wow. Yeah, well, I mean, after the first movie came out,
I mean, that makes sense as well. But
Yeah, they have great on-screen chemistry. I mean, it's like one of the things that really makes this movie work is Paul Hogan just seems so genuine and real. I mean, that it just seems like they pulled him out of the Outback. It doesn't really seem like he's a movie character, you know what I mean? It just seems like they found this guy. And by all accounts, I mean, it's obviously exaggerated, but by all accounts, Paul Hogan really is like a lot like the character of Dundee, minus the feats of destroying crocodiles and shit, but just like personality wise is very similar to Dundee. Dude, I like when he picked up the soup can and took down that robber with it. That was
fun. Oh yeah. That was good shit. I like, this is a like and dislike, or like kind of like what I was talking about with like, it's hard for me to like really root for him or like really be on his side, but it's like, yeah, it's like this, you know, light romance, but he's like, you know, killing a snake violently in front of her, or like stabbing the shit out of that crocodile, like no warning, no look away, you know, he's just like doing that. And I think he's even like when he's out and about in New York, he sees like a bald guy, he just like laughs at him. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I get it. He probably hasn't seen a lot of people, it sounds like, but I just thought that was funny too.
I don't remember that at all.
I think it's like when he first comes out of the hotel. Oh, and I don't want to forget, I love the detail of how he stabs the wallpaper and like hangs up the line.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Yeah. So we're coming up on just about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Speak now, forever hold your peace. Do we have any other burning topics about it? This was a hard movie. Like, I really like this movie, but this is a hard movie to talk about because there is very little plot.
Right.
It's more like an extended SNL sketch, you know, where it's like, look at all these funny situations we put this guy in. So, anybody?
The only other thing, I guess it has that moment or moments where it's like, is this a comedy or is this a horror movie? Like with the different music, where it's like, you know, they're sleeping out in the Outback and then he's using the deer or the kangaroo carcass to shoot at the poachers or whatever. He's like, if I was that woman, I'd be kind of afraid to be around that guy. And even the knife scene, you know, this is a knife. Like, yeah, he like defended her, but he's got the big knife and he like almost cut up that guy. It's like, yeah, kind of make me a little nervous with that knife.
Dude, I knew it was coming and I still laugh so hard when he said, this is a knife. I just thought that was like the... I'm sure that is the most quoted movie of 1986, or you know, the late 80s in general. I asked my dad, I was like, hey, we're watching a movie from 1986 this week. What do you think it is? And he's like, Top Gun. And I said, way less gay. And he was like, he had like five other guesses before I told him it was Crocodile Dundee. So, all right, do we want to move on to final stars and ratings? Neil, what would you give Crocodile Dundee?
I think I'm going to give it a 3. I think it's like a perfectly serviceable movie. You know, any of like the complaints that I had are, you know, kind of nitpicky on some level. You know, I even with them, it holds up. Like, it does what it set out to do, even if it did change what it wanted to do halfway through, as we might guess. But, you know, I don't have any desire to watch it again anytime soon. You know, like, you know, if I was in a hotel and it was on TV, I'd watch it, and you know, and I'll think of it fondly. But like, it's not a 4, it's not a 5, but it's perfectly reasonable. It does have some like good laugh out loud moments, and like no major detractions.
Yeah, I can get behind that assessment. Gideon, how about you?
Yeah, for me, probably the highest I could give it would be a 2. I did have a lot of fun with this. It's like, for me, it's kind of like a good bad movie. It's a bit like problematic or like dated, or with some of the jokes and like, you know, some of the characters don't really click for me. Even though I do agree, like, I think Crocodile Dundee is a very entertaining character just to watch and stuff like that. It's just certain things about how the movie is structured is kind of clunky for me. But I mean, I'm glad I watched it. I was laughing my ass off at it and just having a good time. But yeah, just I would give it a 2.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's all valid. You know, one thing I will say about like the problematic quote unquote stuff in this movie is that I think that like it's like you can look back at a lot of movies and say that, and I always feel like you have to judge it by like the intent of the character, and I feel like Crocodile Dundee is like not used to like the character himself is not used to these people and not used to New York City and not used to like being put in these situations before, but he himself like doesn't really have much of a problem with anybody as much as he is like backwards. It's like he is a personally, you know, he reminds me of like the rural men that I know in my life who have never met a trans person in their life and don't know what the correct language is, but they just want everybody to live their life and go about their business, and you know, it's none of their, they feel like it's none of their business, but they might know how to always say the right thing. And that I get the feeling that that is kind of how Crocodile Dundee himself is. So that I don't have as much of a problem with that kind of stuff in this movie, because it's like it is used as a punchline. But those characters, well, okay, maybe not the one that he first grabs in the bar, but I'm thinking of the lady later at the party where he grabs their private parts and Sue dismisses it. She's like, oh, he's from Australia. And she's like, well, I got to go there. You know, like that was really, really funny.
Right.
And a good way of making, of like kind of making it okay. You know what I mean? They kind of like absolved Dundee with that little joke, in my opinion. But anyway, this is all a roundabout of way of me saying that I'm going to give this a 4 because we just had a great time watching it. I watched it with Grace. This is the perfect like Friday movie night with Grace kind of movie where it's like it's not overly long, it's not overly complicated or dark or anything like that. It was just a fun time, and we had Twizzlers and we had popcorn. And it's like, you know, what more do you really want? Kind of thing. So it's very hard for me to separate the movie from like the context in which I watched it, but the context was so good in this case that I feel like I have to give it a 4. Why is it not a 5? Because it just isn't the kind of movie that is going to like shatter your expectations of what a movie can be. It's, to me, it's just like a really light, breezy summer blockbuster kind of thing, and just light and enjoyable and doesn't get bogged down. And you know, I'm still laughing thinking about it. So, yeah, I think that's where we're gonna end up on that. Did we say we want to do Last Temptation of Christ for next week?
Sure. I'm happy.
I don't want to rob anybody of their pick. Of course, you'll get your chosen movie the following week, and we'll be back on to regular single week periods again.
I'm cool with that.
It would be my pick to sacrifice, and I'm happy to do that. So,
okay, cool.
So let's do that then.
Cool.
All right, guys. Any other fun plans for the evening?
I'm just going to be cleaning and packing to get ready for dog sitting tomorrow.
Nice.
Okay, man.
Maybe do some reading and maybe a little Fortnite and more Adventure Time.
Yeah.
Enjoy your Sabrina Carpenter skin.
Oh yeah. Well, I snipe him, and then I, you know, do some kind of dance emo on him. And,
Fun.
It's so awesome, dude. Seeing them spectating right after I just blasted them, and then dance on their ass. Oh my god, so good.
That's pretty good. I'll be back in on Fortnite when they add Hank Hill.
Dude, I could see that happening.
Well, the new season of King of the Hill is coming out in like a month, so.
Oh shit! Really? I didn't even know.
Yeah. Wow. So, I'm sure they will try to do some tie-in with Fortnite for the King of the Hill new season. So it would be awesome to get Hank. Where's the button to turn myself in? So I'll see you guys next week.
Cool.
See ya.